So they made contact with this first soul that had the high vibration messages for Carolyn, and that soul, we'll call him Baba, said, I want to let you know that I am an ascended master. I am on a group of other ascended masters of a particularly leadership nature. And what we want you to concentrate on in terms of messages of hope is around the environment, because Mother Earth, who has a soul, is in great distress right now. And we want you to focus on that area. And as your contract, you have been selected, in a sense, to be the one to put all this together and create this entire construct of this book and those messages. And that is how it started.
Guy here. My awesome guest today is John Thomas. And if you're wondering how a Silicon Valley tech guy ends up on the podcast today talking about channeled messages of hope from ascended masters in a spiritual council, well, you're as curious as I am, because I love this podcast. I love the grounded approach John took and the conversation we had. I really hit it off with him in the podcast, and it's just great where these podcast conversations take me, and I'm so happy to share it with you. The one thing I want to say as well is that I'm very proactive on a conversation around giving us hope and inspiration, and not so much based upon fear and sometimes the things that can be found on YouTube, especially just to get a free click or clickbait as well. That is not me at all. What I want to be doing is putting out messages that we can all aspire to and make us better humans in our life. And if you enjoy this conversation and you feel it's enlightened you in some way, please be sure to leave a comment in the show notes below, hit a like, subscribe, share it with a loved one, help the algorithms, help me continue to get these podcasts out there. They are reaching more people, and it's only because of this collaborative approach. Let me get my words out. Anyway, enjoy this podcast. If you want to know what we're up to with Live and Flow in 2025, can you believe 2025 is upon us? All the links are below for our retreats in Bali, Croatia, free meditations, courses, coaching. We're here for you. Much love. Enjoy this conversation, and I'll see you soon. Welcome to the podcast.
Guy, pleasure to be here. Thank you.
When Sarah sent me, it said John Thomas, and I was like, oh, is he Welsh? Because it's a very common Welsh name, because I'm from Wales originally. But I thought, oh, he has to be a good guy when bringing you on. But
we'll go with that.
I'm always intrigued when your book came through, Channeled Messages of Hope, and I started exploring, and I found it very it's a fascinating topic, which we're going to dive into today. But I'm interested, if I'm not mistaken, you've got a tech background. And how does one end up doing what you do, end up involved in a book like this?
Well, first of all, my wife, Carolyn, she's the primary author. She's the inspiration. She's the idea. And she kind of brought me in. And if you'd like, I can go into the short story of the genesis of all this. So Carolyn had a friend, Sam Larkin, who's on the cover of the book. Sam Larkin is a channeler. Sam does an interesting type of channeling we would call voice channeling, where a soul, she can invoke a soul. It will come in. It will actually take over her vocal cords. And we can hold a conversation with that soul directly, a dialogue through Sam. And we do, and Sam has no recollection usually afterwards of the experience or the content or that sort of thing. But how we got to the point of being able to do those interviews is that Sam and Carolyn had been friends for a long time. Sam is not a professional channeler per se, but she realized growing up that she had great skills. She could sort of detect or intuitively know what animals were thinking. She just found this out, and so she started helping people out that had issues with animals in their homes, and that's how Carolyn and Sam got together. We were having some trouble with our cats, actually. Somehow, Carolyn, through another person, got to know Sam. Sam helped us out with these cats, and this was probably 10, 15 years ago. What happened then in the last several years is that Sam started feeling she was getting these messages to her, very high vibration messages, high energy, that were you know, destined for Carolyn. She didn't understand it. She didn't know it. She didn't know what was going on. And but she told Carolyn about this. So Carolyn and Sam got together and said, well, let's see if we can bring in wherever these messages are coming from. And it turned out that the messages were coming from an entity on the other side who was, as we came to find, they came to find through multiple conversations like this through Sam, was an ascended master and had a particular relationship with Carolyn that went back lifetimes. And so that started the whole thing going. Carolyn and Sam said, wow, I'm really short-circuiting a lot of stuff here, but they said, if we can contact souls in that way, and the Sam talking through me, Carolyn, you can have a conversation, maybe we could talk to others. So they ended up having conversations with some other souls on the other side for various specific reasons, like David Bowie and some others. And they found that they could have these dialogues actually through Sam, which is quite unique. Intuitive channeling usually is you tell the channeler, this is who I want to, you know, communicate with. I have this thing I want to pass on. The channeler makes contact, pass it on. Information comes back. Channeler passes it back. That's the classical thing that, you know, that we've seen a lot of. And it's very legitimate. In this case, voice channeling, as I mentioned before, where the soul comes in, actually takes over the body. And once they realized that they could do this sort of thing, where Carolyn, who is not a channeler, and Sam, who is a voice channeler, and the soul, Sam is almost like the internet for these conversations in a sense. So Carolyn kind of realized, wow. And she had this inspiration that if we can do this, and we've demonstrated we can talk to certain souls, maybe I could do a project where we talk to a variety of souls. And Carolyn, you know, she's tuned in. The things that are going on, we have a divided country here in the USA. We have environmental problems. We have wars. We have all these things. If there's some messages of hope for people that could really use those, maybe I can make contact with souls that could give us some insights to help people very concerned about these things. That was the inspiration. Wow. To the book. So, and that's in the introduction of the book. There's a lot of stuff in this book. It's not just about the environment. It's about what are the souls doing on the other side? How do they connect with people on Earth? There's a variety of things. We'll get into them in this interview. But to kind of get to the end of the story about the genesis of the book, Carolyn, you know, she had this idea. So they made contact with this first soul that had the high vibration messages for Carolyn. And that soul, we'll call him Baba for the moment, said, in the conversation, I want to let you know that I am an ascended master. I am on a group of other ascended masters of a particularly, I don't know exactly how to term this. You know, here we would say they're the board of directors or something, but they are of a leadership nature. And what Baba told Carolyn is, this idea that you have is the right idea. And it's our idea from the council. And what we want you to concentrate on in terms of messages of hope is around the environment, because Mother Earth, who has a soul, is in great distress right now. And we want you to focus on that area. And as your contract, you have been selected in a sense to be the one to put all this together and create, you know, this entire construct of this book and those messages. And that is how it started.
It's quite a thing, isn't it?
it's unbelievable. Now, you would say, well, how did I get involved? I'm just the guy here. I'm the tech guy.
I know.
In Silicon Valley, as you might read.
That's what blows my mind. And you speak so matter-of-factly, which I love. It's really grounded. And have you always been open to this? Or have you been kind of like, yeah.
I have. I will say that, look, I'm no spiritual savant. You know, I just know what I know. But my mother actually kind of got, I've always been very open in this way. And this book is really for people that are spiritually open, spiritually curious. There's a lot there. And also are, you know, concerned about the environment and where it's going. I personally, I've always kind of been in that vein, open to that. I don't know why. I never had some sort of skeptical thing, question it, nor did I, you know, have this kind of flowery thing like, oh, everything is talking to me. It's just not like that, you know. It's just I know that there's another plane out there. There's another dimension. I don't feel the souls are that separated from us. It's just my intuitive feel. And then when this book came along and Carolyn started this, I was not part of the initial genesis. Of course, she's my wife. I live with her, so we're talking about it. But it was her project. But when the fact it was about the environment, and when she started putting together the type of souls that she felt we needed to talk to, and the list of souls, there's 19 in the table of contents, those were not all predetermined. A lot of these came about through other souls directing us. But she knew that some of them were very technical, such as Albert Einstein, Tesla, and everything. And, you know, my background is more technical here in Silicon Valley. It's kind of what I've done. And she felt that I could be useful, you know, to be talking to some of these guys in a more technical, these souls in a more technical way. And that drew me in. But once I was in, man, I was all in. And, Carolyn is the inspiration and the primary author. I will list as a co-author, and I do these types of interviews. I mean, I was there every step of the way. Wow. So it's really been quite
That's amazing. Journey. And is this kind of conversation open in Silicon Valley, or are people going to know that you've released this book and think, geez, what's this guy been drinking? You know what I mean?
There is that. Okay, there is that. Is it open? I wouldn't say it's closed, but we're not here to convince people. People will always say, this channeling, how do you know if it's real? Look, it's not our job to convince you it's real. If you're spiritually open, spiritually curious, and you have this intuition, this idea that it's there, that you are the audience we want to talk to. I'm not saying it's closed here because it's not like it's a topic on the table and people are trying to squash it or elevate it. It's not like that. It's just, but it's not for everybody. And people, especially here where I live and work in Silicon Valley, are so hyper-focused on their situation. Let me just call it, as we say in the USA, the rat race. Okay, they're really focused in this area. And I think as you get a little older, as I am, and you start to get some perspective and you start to think about, well, what's going on this earth and where are we really going? And you start to examine things like, what is this life that I'm living and why am I living it? And there's a lot of this kind of stuff in the book about the souls and what their lessons were in their lifetime and how they're dealing with it. Completely different from environmental topics. It certainly makes a guy like me really open up and want to learn more, and a lot of other people do too. Yeah. But it's not a general topic. You know, you're not going to see me sitting down at Barnes & Noble in Santa Clara. I mean, maybe I will. Why not?
You never know.
Right? But it's not a taboo thing at all. It's just, you know, you have to deploy these things in a certain way so that people don't polarize.
Absolutely. It's interesting. When I started this podcast on a spiritual conversation, I was kind of like ready to put my arms up thinking, oh my God, what are people going to subject me to or anything by putting yourself out there? But it turned out the only people that wanted to hear it were the ones that wanted to listen and explored and were supportive. And it became a very sacred space then and a safe place to have these conversations because the only people listening are the ones that are interested anyway. So it's,
very well stated.
I'm curious as well, because I want to dive into the Ascended Masters and the souls who you had in the book and everything. But what has been involved in this book done for your spiritual growth and evolution? What have you really reflected upon during this time? Because how could you not, right? I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Well, I really appreciate you asking that question because there has been a lot of that. And for me personally, you know, what the souls have told us and explained to us is that they live their lifetime, which is a bunch of human experiences. Do your best with it. But there are lessons. There are challenges you face. There's ways you respond to those challenges. And how you respond to those challenges are part of, as I have learned through these conversations, part of your growth. I mean, you're here on this earth to try to have all these experiences, grow, and this is my belief system, and you may come back because there's other things you now need to work on. But for me personally, Guy, it really made me cognizant of in my own life. Like, for instance, you will hear people say, why does this keep happening to me over and over? I pick the same kind of partner. I have the same kind of relationship. It ends the same way. And I started realizing as I looked through my own life, and I could look at my life and say, wow, I mean, I'm a very fortunate guy. I mean, Carolyn, my wife, I love her. We live in California here. We go to the coast. We do all these things. But I have had a lot of challenges in my life. And now as I realize and I look back at these things, I see there's some repeated occurrences of how I have dealt with some of those challenges that have made me have to redo them. And sometimes I don't know exactly how it works, but I feel like when I didn't get it, the universe ratcheted up the consequence. And then I would go through it again. And then if I didn't get it, the consequence would ratchet up. And I've had a few where the consequence was like, oh my God, this is the lesson. What I feel for myself, okay, my introspective lesson is that I think in this lifetime, I understand the lessons that I needed to work through. I mean, I'm getting them now at this state. Now, a couple of them I'm actually still in. So because I got myself in, now I have to figure out how to extricate. This is the consequence of the whole thing. But it's like, if it hadn't been for the experience of this book, of talking to these souls and them relating these types of things, I don't think I would have the introspection to even look at my own life in the same way. And it's been, I mean, extremely valuable for me. Here's what I don't want. I don't want to have to come back and relearn the thing that I could have learned in this lifetime. I would rather figure it out in this lifetime so I can make some progress. And the other point I would like to make on this topic is we look at, you know, reincarnation, another topic. You know, what do people think about that? Well, my personal belief system is that there is a soul, but that soul can come back in a body multiple times as we make that progression. And, you know, people think about, well, what kind of world am I leaving for my child? And that's legit, especially around environment. But I also would ask people to think also, what kind of world am I leaving for me if I have to come back to work through some other things? Maybe I can do some things now in this lifetime to kind of help this earth, try to make my incremental, you know, contribution so that it's at least a little bit better next time I have to come back to it. That's a realization I did not have before.
Wow. Wow. It definitely makes you become more aware, doesn't it? You know, it's interesting. I got a little note here from something about souls are back in the body now, even the persona of a particular lifetime, like John Muir, who is on Earth. Mm-hmm. Would you explain a little bit more about that?
So this is something that as we started on the soul interviews, we got better and better about asking them about more and different things. And this concept that you could be talking to a soul, for example, John Muir, the persona of John Muir. And so we started asking, well, wait a minute, John, we're talking to you as John Muir, but are you back in Earth now in a body? And he told it, I mean, in a very matter-of-fact way, these souls, you ask them, they will tell you. Now, some are a little cagey. The ascended masters like Baba, they're not going to reveal everything. But John Muir said, yes, I am back in a body right now. In fact, I'm an adolescent. I'm a young teen. I'm a snowboarder. In Alberta. Now, look, I didn't get the address. I couldn't, like, look it up on social media, so I don't think they would have gone that far. But I'm like, I was stunned. Pato Lake? What the heck? I've never heard of that. Alberta? And, boy, right after that interview, we looked it up. He had described the way it looked, and it was as advertised.
Wow.
And that wasn't the only one. I mean, Albert Einstein wanted us to talk to Mileva Einstein. We were talking to Albert about nuclear fusion and some of these things, and we always learn to ask the souls, who else should we talk to? He said, Mileva. We're like, Mileva? You know, this is, again, how did the table of contents come together? It wasn't predetermined. Souls oftentimes led us to others. And I'll make this a short story, guy, but Mileva was Albert's wife who they divorced, but she was his wife, you know, on Earth when he was going through all of the theory of relativity and all that. And she was as big a contributor as anybody scientifically and technically to his works. The reason he wanted us to talk to her is that she was never given credit for those works because in that day, women were not respected. for technical contribution and things like that. So even though she was brilliant in her own right, she contributed greatly in her way, she was never given that credit. And in fact, Albert and Mileva had a son, Edward, who had schizophrenia. So when they divorced, it was left with Mileva to raise Edward and figure that whole thing out. So not only did she not get any credit for her technical contribution, she was left with the heavy lift of taking care of the mentally challenged son. Albert wanted us to talk to Mileva to, as his way, you know, bring that story to the surface. It's part of his lesson, was really to understand that you have to be like this with your partner, okay? And my final point on that is, so we asked Mileva, well, are you back here in a lifetime? Not only that, she told us exactly how many lifetimes she had. She said 122. That was really kind of like, wow. But she's in a lifetime as a psychotherapist in India. All she would say is, we can call him David, but he is working with mentally challenged, you know, people in India because of the experience she had with Edward with schizophrenia and all that stuff. So she came back to make a contribution there. This is the kind of stuff that you get reading through these interviews, which absolutely
isn't it. Now, I'm guessing the snowboarder and the guy in India don't know who they are from past lives.
I would for sure doubt it. I don't think there's any connection. I don't think people, I don't know. Okay. All I know is what I've heard from the souls and what I can surmise. But I think that soul is from source. And there are multiple lifetimes people coming down to it. But I don't think, at least I haven't seen any evidence that a lifetime can understand the lifetime they came from. Now, you can get some spiritual counseling. Possibly you can talk to people that are psychically gifted and they might relate some experiences you may have had in a previous lifetime. This has happened for me, but like, I mean, I don't know if I could ever find this young man in Alberta and say, do you know that John Muir was in your lineage? That would probably be something.
I'd probably run very quickly.
Yeah, I just can't see that.
The whole thing, my head just goes like, wow, like, yeah, the whole possibilities.
I know. If you need some duct tape, I have some over here. You know.
So then with the book, right, you mentioned like the Ascended Masters coming together, almost like a boardroom, you know, CEOs or whatever it might be coming through. What was their intent then by coming together like this?
Well, first of all, there is an afterword from the council in the book. And from what we can try to put together, what is this council? How do they differ from other souls that are coming in and going out? What we can, you know, put together here is that they are fully ascended. They're not coming back in a body. They are people like Baba. Saint Francis is in our book. I'm convinced Saint Francis is on this council, although these council members, except for this Baba who keeps himself very kind of behind the curtain a little bit, they won't tell you a lot about it. But the council appears to have some, to use kind of human terms here, some policy setting influence, okay? And when they came up with this idea that messages of hope should be focused on the environment, and Carolyn was selected to be the one to carry the messages, they were reacting to what, as was explained to us, they felt, and this is in the book, you'll see it in the introductions, what they felt was a real issue that Mother Earth is feeling very underappreciated. Maybe I could even go so far as to say abused. Reflection of the way man is treating man, and then the way the earth is being treated, and the earth is reacting a sense in anger right now. And we're seeing it, climate change, we're seeing extreme weather, we're seeing extremes on all parts of it. And it was explained that a lot of this is that Mother Earth is reacting in a very angry fashion because of the way that we're actually treating each other. And as a byproduct of that, man placing himself higher, treating each other badly, we're just not taking care of Mother Earth. And I personally feel that it feels right to me.
On that topic for a moment then, because it can feel so vast, isn't it, when you look out into the world and you see the struggles that are going on and the conflicts, and, you know, as this little individual person, you can feel so helpless on times and think, gosh, is this ever going to change? Are we ever really going to start to live with the land as opposed to just on it and work with it and start to become more of a unified consciousness as opposed to seeing everyone as separate from everyone else? What do you feel, or even with the book has come through, and how do you see these things moving forward in the future?
I mean, that's a really good point, because we, as just like one person, you can feel despair. You know, you see on TV, the ice caps are melting. All you see is bad news. And then you think about like my kids, or like I mentioned before, right? If I was worried about my next lifetime, I have other things to worry about today than that right now. But what came through, and when you look at our table of contents, we have everything from policymakers to preservationists, technologists, and spiritual leaders. And I can tell you the spiritual leaders, Wayne Dyer, St. Francis. St. Francis really made it clear to me. And the way he made it clear was he said, look, we are all one. Not everybody looks at it that way, but we as people, animals, you know, plant life, the earth, we're all connected. And so we need to revere and respect each other in the way that if we truly felt connected to all this, we would have a lot more respect for that. If we have that attitude, that's like step one. It's not about picking up a piece of litter, which would help greatly, don't get me wrong, but it's about the attitude of knowing that we're fully connected, including to Mother Earth, which has a soul. And, you know, Wayne Dyer would say that Mother Earth is seeing that we are not treating each other well. And there's an anger in the way that just humans are interacting, and it's reflecting, you know, kind of to Mother Earth, as I mentioned, which has a soul. So the first thing we need to do is understand that we're all connected. John Muir said, look, if you treated this earth like it was a church, have that level of respect, you would have a different way, you know, of probably operating through your day. I can point out practical examples. Look at the pandemic. In the pandemic, what happened to the air quality over, let's say, Beijing? And China is a big abuser of, you know, pollution, you know, all that kind of stuff, because there's an economic aspect to all this. If you read through the policymaker interviews in this book, you'll see they have much more practical why things are happening on Earth right now. But during the pandemic, the air quality cleaned up dramatically in a short time. And you could go to people, you know, you could go to souls like Gandhi, who would say, look, we just need to all kind of slow down a little bit, which is hard to do, especially where I live in Silicon Valley, where everything is go, go, go competition. But if we would treat the earth like a church, know that we're all connected, and I look at it like this guy, it's like, what if for the next month, what if all of us said, we will not litter, and if we see a piece of litter, one piece, we'll pick it up. I'm telling you, I know that this would change the environment, the world that we live in, and not just because litter would be coming off the ground, and it would be because people are changing the way that they think. And so for us humans, there's many small things each human can do tactically. Policymakers would say, you know, write your legislators. You know, there's a variety of things in the book that you can read. Jacques Cousteau on the oceans. The oceans are so important, and many people are working on technical innovations. I don't want to leave this out before our interview's over, but you know, there are many technology innovations coming through for clean energy, replacing things that are polluting the environment, et cetera, et cetera. The younger generation, I'm the older generation, even though I work in a startup where we're trying to do things environmentally sustainable, but the younger generation is working on this. But really, it's a mindset of people to treat each other better and treat each other as if we're all connected, which means we'll treat the earth better. And that may sound a little bit like that's kind of a little bit high level, but I really do believe.
No, I believe everything you're saying. You know, it all starts with ourselves ultimately. And as we can be that version of what we want to see in the world and start honoring that, become more aware of our own patterns, behaviors, and belief systems, then the change begins. I always think about Wayne Dyer. He would always talk about, I think it was like almost just 1% of humanity. If that consciousness, then there'd be a tipping point. There would be a shift that would ripple through the rest of consciousness. So
yeah,
that's inspiring.
I think so. Yeah. And, yeah. Wayne Dyer is one of the noted spiritual leaders that we talked to. Actually, it was one of Carolyn's, again, Carolyn, the principal author, one of her most moving interviews. And by the way, if anyone wants, you know, we talk about the interviews. We held that dialogue. We recorded all that dialogue. We'll probably have an audio book coming out with that. But right now on our website, channelmessagesofhope.com, all one word, you can hear excerpts from these interviews because we recorded them. We did a Zoom session. Sam was remote. She was an hour away. And we would do Zoom sessions where Sam would invoke the soul. We would have the conversation. We would record the audio from the audio book.
Wow.
Was created.
And so Sam would record for what, an hour at a time? Would she go into trance?
Well, the way this worked is that Carolyn, who is not a channeler, but Carolyn would have her idea. And we, like I said, some souls led us to other souls. For instance, Theodore Roosevelt said, you have to talk to John Muir. For example, Nikola Tesla said, you need to talk to Samuel Clemens. There's a story there. But what we would do is when there was, the interviews came up and this happened over about a 6-month period and Carolyn would determine that's a soul we want to talk to. She would do deep research, read a lot of books. Wow. She would create the framework of the conversation. These weren't just, as we say in the USA, willy nilly. I mean, there was a lot of background that led into the framework of how we wanted to, you know, talk to that soul. And we would then let Sam know, but usually only a day before, here's the soul we're talking about. Here's a picture. Oftentimes Sam didn't know anything about these souls. Sam lives here in the Bay Area, here in California. She works in financial services. She's not a tech, Silicon Valley. So Nikola Tesla, okay, I know Tesla. I see all these cars around here. But, we would let her know. When we went into the session with her, we would have kind of an invocation process where she would bring the soul in. That usually took about a minute. And Sam would actually go into, I don't want to say it's an actual trance, but the soul would come in and really take her vocal cords. And what was crazy, let me just say, and you can listen to it on the website, is that all of a sudden Sam, like when we did John Muir, Sam's talking in a Scottish accent. It's like, what? Where did this come from? You know, she didn't. And different souls that for the persona we were talking to, whether it was Eastern European or whatever, and you would hear it come through in Sam's voice. As mentioned at the start of this interview, Sam would really have no real recollection of the entire process. They usually did not go over an hour. And what we found is that it was hard for Sam and her energy, but it was also for the soul. Apparently, it's a lot of energy for that soul to hold that connection in that way. And so an hour, so there were a couple interviews where we actually did a second session because we wanted to follow up, but it was, and you can listen to a few excerpts and you can.
Yeah, an audiobook would be fantastic on that as well, being able to listen to it. Yeah,
it's in process,
I can imagine.
Right now, yeah.
Who was the first soul then you reached out to? Do you remember?
Yeah. The first soul that Carolyn came up with was actually, we say GW43, George Bush, or I'm sorry, GW41. 43 was his son. So, and Carolyn really loved him. She said he had a very grandfatherly energy. He did a lot of things actually environmentally in his administration, and he was the first one, and then others flowed from there. But what we found in talking to the soul, where we're looking for messages of hope around the environment, but some of the messages of hope came through in a different way. For example, many of these souls are guides for people, for us, for people on Earth, or people that want them to be a guide. For example, John McCain is working on the other side with other ascended souls you know, people like George Washington, others that were very interested in democracy. And he's now influencing others on Earth that are interested in the same thing as a guide. And there's a lot in the book about how guides communicate with us through dreams, through inspirations, through things like that. But GW41 also told us about other things that were of great interest. Like, what is it like on the transition when you go from in a body over to the other side? What is that like? What happens there? And what he told us is that he had lost a daughter at a very early age. And when he transitioned and he kind of appeared on the other side, and there seems to be some sort of process. It's a little bit fuzzy as your soul is making its way over. It's kind of shedding the body, but the soul lives on. And he was greeted by his daughter. He was greeted by many pets. And I'll tell you one thing that came through, and we talked to many souls about that transition process. It was a little bit different for all of them. For instance, when Wayne Dyer went over, he said when he kind of, you know, realized he was on the other side, he goes, it looks just like Maui. It looks just like Hawaii, because that's where he came from. That was heaven for him. When Rachel Carson, who wrote the famous book Silent Spring, when she transitioned over, and that Silent Spring was a highly controversial book because it talked a lot about pesticides. She, in its day, she got a lot of pressure not to do that book. She did it, you know, Big Oil, et cetera, didn't want her to do that. But when she transitioned over, she said she was greeted, as related in the book, by a million monarch butterflies. And I'm guessing that was probably an appreciation for what she did for wildlife. There was a particular pesticide at the time called DDT. You may have heard of it.
I remember that as a kid, yeah.
Really bad. And yeah, she brought a lot of awareness to that. So that's a long answer for interview.
I do get intrigued because, you know, I've had many conversations on this podcast where they talk about a life review at the end of it and start actually going through that. Mm-hmm. Did that come up in conversation? And do they even speak about how do they take on the lessons? Because maybe some of the souls hadn't learned the lesson or the final lesson that they were meant to, or they did. And then how do we take that on board, you know, moving forward?
Oh, that definitely came up. And so I don't know. I guess we'll all find out later, right? But it's like when you're in your life experience here in a body, is there a final thing that you're supposed to figure out? I'm not sure, because we do have this thing called free will, okay? And so we can make life choices. At the same time, what's become clear through all the soul interviews is there are particular things that maybe we came down to work on. We may or may not work on those. Here's a really good example of that. Carolyn, in her research, decided she wanted to talk to our former president, Richard Nixon. You might recall Richard Nixon of Watergate fame from way, way back. Now, many people, this is in many podcasts like this guy, many people say, well, Richard Nixon, especially USA people. But if you look at his administration, the reason Carolyn wanted to do that is because in her research, she read the 1970 State of the Union Address from Richard Nixon, which was all about the environment. He was decades ahead of his time in terms of where clean water is going, where clean air is going. He set up the EPA. This man did many great things for the environment. He's remembered, you know, in a bad way, you know, for the Watergate stuff. But Carolyn wanted to talk to him because he was ahead of his time. Well, it was explained to us, and I think it may have been Wayne or another soul told us, oh, Richard Nixon is in deep review. You'll never get him out right now. Well, we tried. Carolyn was terrified, but she gave it a try, and Richard Nixon did come through. He didn't come through fast in the way like Theodore Roosevelt. Sam told us Theodore Roosevelt rode in on Cleo. Cleopatra was his famous horse, okay? He was a big, you know, Rough Riders and all that. Richard Nixon, it took a while. And finally, you heard this kind of this very, I don't want to say meek, but reserved voice answer. And the first thing he said is, why do you want to talk to me? This was Richard Nixon, the soul, talking. So Carolyn explained why we wanted to talk to him. And then he kind of warmed up a little bit. But what he told us is that he's been in a deep review because in his lifetime on Earth, he was a man of great arrogance, abused power, had to win at any costs, great hubris, you know, that whole thing. This is what we recall from Watergate. And his life review was about the destruction that that caused. And, you know, so that when he goes back in his next lifetime, he can work on not having to go that direction. Another policymaker, Ronald Reagan, on the other hand, what he told us is when he was on Earth, you know, what he's realized now in his review is that he was always kind of putting out this false persona. He was always hiding behind something. And when you look at his history, Ronald Reagan, he was an actor first, which makes sense. Then he went to be president. But he told us, I never, and this is all in the book to be read about, I never felt like I was really putting out my authentic self. I was always hiding behind something. And in his next lifetime that he's planning through his review process, he wants to work on putting out a more authentic self.
Interesting.
Now, Guy, if we have time, I can give you one more example you might be interested in. Okay. Nikola Tesla, prolific inventor. 6 a.m. to midnight, he's in the lab. And by the way, he told us to talk to Samuel Clemens. Super short story, why? Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain, was a big investor in the time. He would take this money he made from writing these books. He'd invest in technologies. He got to know Nikola Tesla very closely through that period. We never would have figured out why talk to Samuel Clemens. But anyway, you can read all about that. But Nikola Tesla was so absorbed in his work, so completely. I mean, this guy, it was amazing. And his inventions are prolific. There's some famous stories about Tesla that pigeons would visit him, and he developed these relationships with pigeons that would visit his lab window and everything. And it's true. What he told us is what he has realized, what he missed out on in his lifetime, in that lifetime, was it being able to experience love and companionship with, you know, another person or community. But he was so isolated because he was so driven, he missed that whole part of the human experience. And he wants to come back in his next body and be able to experience that. He missed it. So this is the kind of thing that you can read all about. You'll find out about the environment and what these guys are doing, but that kind of stuff, that's what's given me the introspection, Guy, to look at, like, at my own thing, the question you asked me very early in the interview. It really makes you stop and look at your own life and say, I wonder what my deal was.
It's fascinating. The what really jumped out at me when you said that then was Reagan about coming back more as his authentic self. And I really see that and feel that we're really struggle quite often to put our authentic selves out there, our real us, and we tend to wear these masks and armor, and somehow we've identified ourselves that's a way to stay safe. But I really feel, as a soul's journey, that authenticity is really where it's at. It has been for me anyway, you know, on that journey.
I do think you're right, and especially like around here where I live, Silicon Valley, where the aura of success needs to be, you know, my kid goes to this famous private school. You know, there's all this usual kind of stuff that we as humans experience. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, people have different personalities. And what attracts us to the other person is when they show a particular vulnerability or that authenticity so that you feel like, wow, I really know that person. And maybe they're actually interested in me, and I want to be, you know, I can learn from that person, or I just feel this, you know, this attraction that I want to get closer to that person. And I think that the way society works now, even St. Francis had comments about social media in the way that social media is a vehicle for people to step back and isolate, you know, and not have those kind of communications. I'm not saying social media is bad. No. Look at us right now, right? But there is a balance. Just as the environment needs to be in balance, us as human beings, spiritually, emotionally, physically, you know, that balance is actually critical. When things get out of balance, whether it's for the environment or maybe even personally for myself, you know, if I get out of balance in any one area, there's these forces that are trying to push me back to the middle because it just doesn't feel
absolutely good. I couldn't agree more. So the book, is it out for sale? Can it be purchased now? Has it been released yet?
Yeah. Oh, the book is definitely out. It's out. And our website, www.channeledmessagesofhope.com. It's on Amazon. If you go to the website, you can read more about it. You can hear those excerpts that I'm talking about from like 9 different ones. So you can easily buy the book in that way. And really, let me just say, Guy, that, you know, our goal with this was simply for people that are spiritually open, spiritually curious, and really, you know, care about the environment. This is not the only book in this series, but these are messages of hope more geared to the environment and giving people at least a sense. Is there anything I can do individually? Well, yes, there is. And a lot of it is about attitude. There's also a list of things tactically that they can do. But for those people that are really looking for something like that, our goal is just we want to make people aware that this is out there and it's there for you. And
absolutely. I mean, that's why I got you on the podcast. I was trying to share it as many people as possible because we need more messages of hope, that's for sure, which I'm definitely all about. Last question for you. So with everything we've covered on the podcast today, is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners to ponder on, John?
You know, I think the main thing I would like to leave the listeners with is that we have so much bad news, and at least I'm in the USA, okay? Everything, just the news, everything is coming through, and it can leave us in a state of despair about many things, the environment just being one. And there are spiritual solutions. I mean, Wayne Dyer even wrote a book, you know, there's a spiritual solution to every problem. I'm not saying that's like you snap your fingers, it's going to be taken care of. But for those people that, you know, are spiritually open, curious, care about the environment, want to learn more about, you know, even in this lifetime, let's say over and above the environment, this is like the introspection I've come to personally of things I can do in my own lifetime to try to improve my experience and the experience of those around me. I think this book will be uplifting. And I think there's a lot of learning. People, I mean, when you start looking at how does it work for the souls to be guides? Can I have a soul be my guide? The answer is yes. We talk about that. What's it like on transition? Should I fear that? Absolutely not. It's pure love when you get to the other side. There's a lot of descriptions about that from different souls. So I just think there's a lot of different things here for people that are in that demographic of the spiritually open, curious, care about the environment. Carolyn will have another book coming out probably next year or something around that time frame. Maybe it'll be about forgiveness. Maybe it'll be about overcoming life challenges. I'm not sure. But if you read this book, I think you'll get a really good feeling that can really, you know, really help you about navigating just this lifetime that we're in.
Fantastic. And I look forward to the Audible version because I have a 10-month-old son, and I can assure you listening to an Audible pushing a pram is much easier than trying to read a book.
What we're actually doing on the audio version is we're taking the true transcripts and we have to clean up the audio to make it, you know, acceptable for an audio book. But you'll hear the interviews as done. And, you know, our audio guy has already, you know, gone through and provided, you know, a chat. I'm really excited about this one coming out, Guy. We'll definitely let you know through Sarah.
Please do, mate. Yeah. And just for everyone listening, the links will be in the show notes below as well. And I hope everyone that listens to this goes out and gets the book, supports it, but also continue to have those messages seep into our brains because we need them more and more. That's as far as I'm concerned anyway. So, John, thank you so much, my man. It was wonderful connecting. Really appreciate it.
Guy, thank you so much for inviting us on to your show. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and hopefully your listeners will too.
No doubt. Thank you, my man.